Hello, and welcome to Beat Cafe, a weekly program sponsored by Offbeat Magazine that explores the music scene in New Orleans and the broader reach of Louisiana. I'm David Johnson, editor at Offbeat and host of this program. Offbeat is a proud supporter of WHIV 102.3 FM. I invite you to visit offbeat.com to read our October digital edition, featuring a cover story about singer-songwriter Dana Kurtz, who you may also know as Lulu in the band Lulu and the Broadsides. You'll also find stories about Alex McMurray, Johnny Vodakovich, Kenny Neal, Charlie Musselwhite, and Chapel Hart, just to name a few. Check out our album reviews, original videos, and live music listings at offbeat.com. And don't forget to vote in the upcoming Best of the Beat Music Awards for your favorite acts and bands. The ceremony will be held on November 10th at the New Orleans Jazz Museum, and you can also purchase tickets at our website. Today's episode will begin with an interview I had with Cherie Scafidi, co-founder and CEO of the inaugural Fresh Mint Festival that will get underway over the weekend of October 21st through the 23rd, centering upon Web3 and NFTs, and how the music and cultural community can benefit from new web-based technology. In the second half of the show, I will be joined by staff at the New Orleans Musicians Clinic, which has been providing medical care and community health programs for New Orleans performers and culture bearers since 1998. We'll discuss mental health in particular. So we'll be discussing the best coping mechanisms for dealing with the stress of that reality here along the Gulf Coast. And welcome to Beat Cafe. I'm David Johnson, host of the program. Welcome today. I am pleased to be joined by Cherie Scafidi. She is the CEO and co-founder of the Fresh Mint Festival, which is coming up here in New Orleans on the Friday and Saturday of October 21st and 22nd. This will be a street festival and conference exploring the Web3 realm, with exhibiting technology in an experiential way. Welcome, Cherie. Happy to have you here today.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me.
So Cherie, you know, NFTs, the Web3, the metaverse, it's all kind of spinning in people's heads. It's something you hear a lot about today, but perhaps you could just kind of give us a base definition for those who aren't familiar with it and what they could expect when they show up at the Fresh Mint Festival.
Definitely. I mean, I think a great place to start is that it's not about terminology or definitions. I think what's important to really grasp is that we're in the next wave of the internet, right? And remember when we were in the first wave of the internet, we had a lot of people saying, what is an email address? What is this at? If you don't have an email address, well, why am I even needing? I have a fax machine, and look at how it touches all our lives in every single way now. And every move that we make in our phones and just the data and all of it, right? We certainly can see and feel now how we are immersed in that wave of technology. And so this is the next wave. It's coming. We're in an early infancy stage of it, which is one of the most beautiful places to be. And that's certainly why Fresh Mint Fest was created, you know, or part of the reason is that what's important is that we expose our community and start to educate our community of all walks of life, no matter what industry you're in, no matter what involvement you have with technology, right? It's really amazing in the design phase before it is what it's going to be. This is when our voices can be most present and most effective in shaping what that outcome is. So when we think, I mean, we're in a city filled with creators. I mean, at its base, I mean, let's just talk about that, right? So if there's going to be a wave of technology that's affecting our creators and how they are going to be able to make money, right? How they are going to be able to express themselves more dynamically, connect with their audiences. I don't see any reason why we wouldn't want to be on the forefront of pushing the envelope. We need to make sure that our creators and our creative community is onboarded and just has even a look. If you even know anything about this, you're already ahead of 90% of the world. Okay. So
it is brand new. Yes. It is as cutting edge as it gets.
Yeah. And so like, this is just a great moment where we're welcoming and inviting people to, you know, hey, if you don't know anything about this, you should probably be there. And if you're a deep diver, you're going to want to be there too, because we have amazing people here in the city that I know for sure collectively to the world They don't understand we all come out of New Orleans. We actually have people here making moves in Web3 that are heavy hitters doing really amazing things. And I mean, I'm traveling around to these conferences. I'm going to check them all out. I want to be there at 8 a.m. till 4 a.m. I want to see everything. The performers, the performances, what are we doing? I'm talking about New Orleans, right? I'm telling people about what we're doing based out of here. And people don't know. For me, this is a great moment for us to plant a flag, right? And it's not just Miami or it's not just New York. We have innovation as we always have, right? I mean, we're epicenter for like music innovation, right? We have innovation that's coming out of New Orleans. You might not think this is where you come to find out, but it is. So we onboard the community while we plant the flag globally. And now's the time to strike, right? Like the iron is hot and being at the forefront of it is just going to help us be able to have, you know, a real voice in what that becomes. Like I mentioned before, I think we have an authentic and genuine intention as a community to make sure that it serves our community best.
So you say this is an experiential festival. Yeah. If I show up, what am I going to experience?
Okay, game on. Let's go. So, all right. So I'll give you a visual of the layout. So Friday day, One Eye Jacks, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. We have speaking panels at One Eye Jacks, and we also have NFT gallery exhibitions upstairs on the third floor. So we're pushing the envelope. We're talking the talk. We're showcasing New Orleans voices and talking about not only what's happening in Web3, whether that has to do with IP, hospitality, environmental and social impact, how culturally we need to be taking advantage of this technology, how it affects New Orleans. Right over here at the French Market, we have a beautiful tent set right against the French Market. We're going to have the first digital marketplace. Want to say that word again?
Yes.
Okay. Digital.
Digital.
Okay.
Yes. I've said it now too.
Yes. Again, I'm going to all these conferences. I got my finger on the pulse of this. And not only do I have the finger on the pulse of this is the next wave. When we talk about like Amazon or Walmart or even like luxury designers having digital twins of physical objects that create more dynamic experiences, whether that's in the metaverse or you're touching things, you know, in real life, but you're purchasing them through the blockchain or Web3, which is, it's okay if you're not there yet. Again, it's coming. Just so you know, bought my first digital piece of clothing here in New Orleans at a gallery exhibition in the French Quarter. That's not happening in New York. That wasn't in Texas. It wasn't in Florida. It was here. It's a really cool thing. And we have creators here that are doing it. So all you need to know is we're in the French Market. And this is that evolution of marketplaces. And we have people who are going to have digital items. Cool. You don't know. Again, even more reason to come find out.
French Market's one of the oldest sources of commerce in the entire North American continent. And the fact that it is in this 21st century realm.
Yeah.
When you say you bought a digital outfit.
Oh my gosh.
Maybe just a little more explanation.
So beautiful. So there's a company here and a really amazing guy, Patrick. He is with Stitched.eth is the name of his brand and company and platform. And so he had a designer line of clothing and garments. What he's doing is working with a lot of designers. And when I say that, I mean, visual artists, think like street artists, think about all of the amazing street art and how do you create revenue and generate revenue off of that showing in the real world? It's public art, but how do you translate that, right, into money and generating income? He can explain that better than I can. Show up to the thing, right? Beautiful garments. There's an NFC chip that's sewn into the garment. Hmm. Okay. And so basically what happens is you go up to the garment and I touch it with my phone and it takes me to an NFT, which all you need to know is similar to like an eBay listing, right? Or an Etsy listing. Touch it with your phone. You're now at the listing. You purchase the thing. And what happens is, though, when you touch it, it takes you to the listing. And what happens when you have a digital listing? You can learn about the artist. You can learn about how the garment was sourced, how it came to be, some of the values behind who's making it. I mean, I know when I walk into a gallery, because I'm viewing this as art, right? There may be a little label, and that label may say a very minimal amount of information about the art or the artist or the medium. I want to know the story. I want to know the context by which this artist created this object or this thing. And so for me, being able to have this touch point physically with my phone, right? And touch the tagging, whatever, you know, that's going to be touch the tagging, tap into this storytelling side of the garment or the art that's awesome. I'm into it. Like, as someone who loves to support artists, as someone who, I mean, yeah, I'm like, oh, sign me up. I'm paying right now. I want that clothing. I'm buying it now. And especially if it's like groundbreaking and innovative coming out of New Orleans. Hell yeah, tap me in, you know? So, yeah.
Of course, the show largely is centered around music. Mm-hmm. So tell me specifically where a musician or someone in the music industry can really benefit from this.
Yeah. So quickly, I'll finish out the daytime. So we have One Eye Jacks, we got the French Market going on. And then we have a gaming HQ over at Midnight Revival across Esplanade, right here near the Mint. And that's going to have like metaverse activations, role play tabletop gaming. They're taking Dungeons and Dragons on the blockchain. What does this mean? Right? Well, come check it out. This is a New Orleans based company, Gripner, that's coming out of here. And they're working with amazing like Marvel comics. I mean, just amazing artists in the world to bring, you know, it's interesting. You have the gameplay in real life, but you're really recording those transactions or those scores online. And what you're doing ultimately is almost minting imagination, because the scores, so to speak, are really like this world that you've built and the story that's evolved. And so you're minting value and currency by minting these results of the game. Very cool stuff. But so daytime, awesome. And then we kind of like have a happy hour. Of course we do. It's going to be okay. And then what we're really doing is we're resetting One Eye Jacks for an amazing history-making performance that evening. So we have a show 8 p.m. till 2 a.m. Big Frida is the headliner for. We'll be announcing some of the other acts here shortly as we get closer. And we are going to be live minting and live auctioning, live performances for the first time ever at a festival. This is with a New Orleans-based company again, go figure, making moves in Web3, Nifty Tunes. And they have an amazing team, part of their team in New York too. There's a live show that's happening. Ultimately, as that show is in its thick of it, right? Think about shows and think about the aspect of live performance always being a unique happening. So as the show is going on, all those best of moments, we have like a big production team here, and those best of moments are being captured on film, those live moments. And then what happens is they get minted pretty close to in real time, sent to the blockchain, sent to the new eBay, right? OpenSea. For NFTs, which again is just it's a product listing for this purpose, is what we'll say, point of sale. And so you go to that NFT and you can bid and you can win. So it's a gamified experience in that way too. These are, to me, this is first of all the next layer of merch. So it's certainly video merch at its like base level, right? This is, I'm sure, if all performers out there, maybe you can speak to that. Sometimes merch sales can be, right, like a sustainable source of income as you're touring. Sometimes maybe even produce more income than the actual show. Who knows? So this is a live actionable version of merch. So not only are you selling this merch and creating a piece of merchandise in which you can always have royalties on secondary sales as it's traded or sold. So you always get a cut of that. You know, let's think about like, I don't know, Rolling Stones, a concert t-shirt from a long time ago that's now worth, who knows, $20,000 or something, right? Well, Rolling Stones never getting a cut of that. Or the artist who designed that shirt is never going to get a cut of that. Those collectors who are trading it speculatively often are the ones who are going to be making the money off of it. So that's pretty cool part of it. And then I think what's really the more exciting end of it is like, I do view these as archived and recorded, documented moments in time. You know, if you think about, I don't know, it's like, oh, I was at Lollapalooza when Pearl Jam did that thing, remember? And it's like having that video clip from that, from this edition, right? This like official edition from that festival. It's almost like a virtual live experience trading card. So that's really cool. And not only is it cool for a bunch of different reasons, but now you also can see and have a way to track through that transaction that lives on this very visible digital ledger. You can see who your fans are and who it's trading within and how it's moving through the space. I think that's awesome. I think this is where musicians are able to absolutely create clearer, more dynamic ways to interact with their fans. I think this is also where fans of artists, through their support, can show their loyalty, can show who they're a part of discovering and supporting. And it's a way that, you know, yeah, it doesn't live siloed in different websites, right? Or like, it's a way in which it's like more universally transparent, and we can all see each other too. So we can find each other, and it really creates community-driven creator economies, which I think is like, that's the deal right now. That's where it's moving.
Well, New Orleans is certainly very heavily based in the creative economy. We are a city of deep tradition. We often tend to look back, you know, versus forward a lot of times.
Yeah.
But it does sound like this really is a way to blend the two, you know, to bring all these magnificent traditions and this music scene and our great art scene into a realm that also sounds a lot more fair. Perhaps, and it's been
absolutely. I mean, think about all the middlemen and points of contact, right, that occur within a Spotify listen, right?
Exactly. Yes.
And where's the real payback of that? I mean, so this is certainly changing the game in that aspect. And I mean, I think you're touching on something which I know I am just like speaks true to my heart is where do preservation and progress meet? And you know, That's a good point for us.
Good point. Yeah. Something that New Orleans often struggles with. We're going to take a brief break, a pause for the cause here at WHIB 102.3. And we'll be back with more conversation with Cherie Scafidi of the Freshman Festival.
The vibe of the city for human rights and social justice. WHIB 102.3 FM.
And welcome back to Beat Cafe. If you're just joining us, I'm David Johnson, and I am here talking today with Cherie Scafidi. She is the CEO and co-founder of the Fresh Mint Festival. That will be an event exploring the Web3 and exhibiting technology in an experiential way. It'll be held on Friday and Saturday, October 21st and 22nd. And Cherie, we've been talking about Web3, and one of the things you're advocating for this festival is it kind of brings Web3, which is often an ephemeral concept for so many people, into real life. So I'll let you take it from there and describe more of that.
I guess a great place to start is, you know, I've been traveling all over the country, diving down that deep, deep rabbit hole of Web3. And it's been really interesting. A lot of talking the talk at these amazing conferences and conventions, beautiful spaces. The real value is the people that come, right? And the ideas that are exchanged. But in all of these events and all of these happenings, I'm always like super thirsty how it's woven into the experience. So if we're going to say that artists can connect better with fans, right? Like, am I at a show? Is there a QR code? Like, what is the thing? How are we doing this? So I really want, and what we're building with Freshman Fest is that this is where you come to, in the most creative way, walk the walk. So there's some amazing companies out there that do have really great platforms or apps, or whether it's AR or VR, right? I want to touch and see all those things. If we're going to talk about the metaverse, what does that look like? I want to see 5 metaverses next to each other so I can see how they're different. I feel like through founding this festival and building it, I mean, the real deal is I'm really building out what I'm thirsty for as like an average person. I mean, yes, I've already dived down the rabbit hole, but also like, I don't consider myself a tech expert. Okay. And I think it's good for me to stay on that end of knowing, you know, what the real population and community is interested in seeing. I think it was funny. I don't know if we were in Austin, someone on stage was like, look, we're nerds building for nerds, right? Like tech's going at a hyperspeed, but that user experience and actually being able to touch the applications and put them in people's hands, that's the greenest pasture out there. Okay. And I agree. And if anybody's going to create experiences, I mean, my goodness, we have the most transformative environment for an experience here. I feel like almost any day of the week, right? I mean, I love being able to go to the grocery store and glitter on a Wednesday and it doesn't matter.
That is New Orleans.
That's New Orleans. And, you know, I think about like Comic-Con and how that started off as a really niche, underground, seemingly community that's coming together and cosplaying, right? And emoting and expressing. And so from a conference standpoint, which we're always going to consider ourselves a festival because it really is about the real user experience, but we'll have a talk the talk, you know, we have to talk the talk. But the walk is, this is where projects can most creatively put the thing in real life and let us use it.
Right. And we were talking earlier off the air that Web3 could potentially open a more even playing ground for a lot of creatives. Yeah. We were talking about Mardi Gras Indians in particular, and how often their art is, for lack of a better, exploited by others.
Sure.
And spread through photography or film, or those who don't really have any rights necessarily to the art that was created. Mm-hmm. So in what way would this realm, this Web3 realm, really be advantageous for people in that community, or let's say even graffiti artists?
Sure.
Anybody of that sort?
Yeah, I mean, it's been really interesting. That has come up in so many conversations that I have on a regular basis, specifically with the Mardi Gras Indians and how these culture bearers, right, who were absolutely throughout the entire year beating the costumes, really, really engaged within the spiritual ritual of this happening. They are putting their time, energy, love, blood, sweat, and tears into this, right? And it becomes a thing that we all rally around, but at its core, they are the culture bearers. So what do I think? I mean, without having a specific answer, I think the tech can enable potential solutions. I think one thing that I've kind of, you know, through conversations and hearing potential ways, you know, creating generational wealth, right, for these culture bearers is like, man, think about the costumes themselves. What if we were creating scans of these, historically documenting and archiving these, first of all? That would be really interesting. And what if potentially there are people who want to support that? You know, this is a way in which they can absolutely monetarily support that, but also potentially engage with that as well. Maybe there, and I don't think this is the solution, but I mean, there's going to be a whole digital world out there. Okay. So if Mardi Gras Indians are going to be having a digital presence in that digital world, what does that look like? I don't know. Maybe these scans are out there. Maybe there's a clearer way for photographers or audience people who are indulging in really being delighted by the experience, that there's just a clear monetary way in which there's not only, you know, firsthand sales and that revenue of like engaging with them, but also are any merch, right, or experiences that are takeaways, the Mardi Gras Indians always have royalties on those secondary sales. So this is how we do create generational wealth. Like that, to me, there's something there to be mined for, like, this is where that mailbox money comes from, right? And this is how it goes to their children and so on from all that hard work. It just seems like there's maybe a clearer, transparent path for that. Again, I don't know the answer, but
it's still informative creation.
Yeah.
But the potential and the opportunity, this is the time to really begin to think about that.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's what the blockchain is doing that I think hasn't been done before, is there is a digital transparent ledger that is immutable and fully accessible. And in a world in which things live so siloed, you know, and you can't really, there's sometimes a time stamping IP is like such an arduous process, right? Or like one that creators just don't know much about, that this can really just facilitate that.
Very good. Well, like I said, it will show up and you'll learn more. Okay. And you'll kind of learn by doing and seeing as this all comes to be. We mentioned earlier that Big Frida is going to be one of the headline performers at One Eye Jack's, and we're actually going to listen to one of her songs as we close out the interview. And it's been known that Big Frida has benefited from NFTs. Could you tell us a little bit about how she's gone about doing that?
Yeah. So Big Frida is definitely dipping her toe in the water in the biggest of ways, as she would do, right? And so we have, you know, talking about how New Orleans has this amazing community of Web3 peeps already here. New Society is one that she just minted an NFT collection for. I think it's been really a really beautiful experience. So there's a basically, which much of the NFT world is about, this is a good moment, I guess, for education too, is NFTs are not just about like just the art or the JPEG, right? It's a way, it's a community driving force. So it almost oftentimes becomes like a card, it's your card holder membership, right? And you're saying, I'm tapping in to be a part of this. And I'm gonna buy this art or this. And I look in all of my NFTs, there may be like a generative collection. I could find the one that I love the most. Mine usually kind of look a little bit like me, some red curly hair, something. You know, I'm like, who's my girl? Or like, who do I identify with? Right. And so you're searching through these collections, which I think are, that's a really cool process for general society, right, to start to think of themselves as collectors. But Big Frida created or worked on this collection in which it's not only a piece of art, but a song that goes with it. And you have access to that song. Now, you know, this is something we'll be talking about at the festival. It's like, cool, what does that mean? What is with IP? What happens with licensing and commercial rights? And like, what does a smart contract entail? What does it not? What restrictions do you have? What happens at the point of resale? Like, these are all great things to come find out about. I feel like I'm founding this festival to answer my own questions, which is awesome. But yeah, like that's all detailed within that smart contract. And then look, when we approached Big Frida and said, hey, we're going to be live minting and live auctioning live performances for the first time ever in the world at a festival. Do you want to be a part of that? And I mean, she and her team were like, absolutely. Why wouldn't we? Why would we not pioneer this out of New Orleans by New Orleans? And so just that enthusiasm, and look, I'll say this, and speaking to like, just like Big Frida's enthusiasm for experimenting is like the community that I feel like I'm tapping into as I find more people who are diving into Web3. It's a beautiful community of people that are open-minded, willing to explore, knowing that it's not all going to work, right? I mean, we're building right now.
Right. It's totally, like you said, the experimental phase of this new era, really.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a lot of things to be scared of. And then there's a lot of things that are very low risk and don't, I mean, so if we're talking about creating video merch and the contract's there and it works, right? I mean, where's the risk? We're creating new streams of revenue. I don't know. There's not that much to be lost.
That's always so, a plus.
You know, I mean, and it's also like, I mean, I'm just so, so excited to see our creators here. And we have some other artists that will be, announcing soon. They're enthused. I mean, it's just a big yes across the board. And the real deal is, why not? And so if we can create models, you know, when we're talking about the Mardi Gras Indians, right, potentially creating models that pay back our culture bearers or new models of revenue for our musicians. If we do this out of here, first of all, this is not where you come to find out what's coming up next, but we create models for other communities in the world, you know? And my heart just can't say enough about how I'm just so proud of our city for all the people that are coming to the table, showing up, right? And doing this, because this is gonna be, on our website, we say, be a part of history. That's what this is.
All right. Well, you can find out more on the internet, of course, by visiting freshmintfest.xyz. And again, the event will be on Friday and Saturday, October 21st and 22nd. And as I said, we're going to close out by hearing Big Frida. Thank you so much, Sherry, for joining me today.
Thank you.
Wiggle, 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 wi
got you covered, New Orleans WHIV-FM, and streaming 24/7 at WHIVFM.org, WHIVLP 102.3 FM, New Orleans.
Hello, and welcome to Beat Cafe. I'm David Johnson, host of this program, sponsored by Offbeat Magazine. Today, I'm going to be joined by three workers from the New Orleans Musicians Clinic and Assistance Foundation, which is a healthcare operation that specifically addresses the needs of our musicians and culture bearers here in New Orleans. So today, I am joined by Nicole Roche. She is the Community Mental Health Network Manager for the New Orleans Musicians Clinic. We also have Dr. Jay Hutchings. He's a psychiatrist and director of psychiatric services for the clinic, and Megan McStravick, who is an intake social worker for the clinic. Thank you all for joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So at the start, for those who may be unaware of the New Orleans Musicians Clinic and Assistance Foundation, let's just get a definition of what this institution is and what needs it addresses in our city. Dr. Hutchings?
Yeah, so the New Orleans Musician Clinic started in 1998 and became the first health initiative in the United States addressing the healthcare needs of musicians and artists, as well as their families. And the idea was to take care of them, whether they were insured, underinsured, or not insured at all. And the point of the clinic was to help the cultural bearers of New Orleans have a home to make it so that they could address their healthcare needs and then continue doing the things that makes New Orleans a special place, a place that is really one of the most unique cities in the world, definitely in the United States.
So where are you headquartered? Is it a specific location or do you have multiple facilities?
So we are located we're embedded in the internal medicine practice for the healthcare network at LSU, which is on St. Charles Avenue. It's been a wonderful relationship to have with LSU. They've been very supportive of the clinic and an instrumental in helping us with our role of getting our patient population to the medical care that they need as well outside of the clinic.
So we're going to talk, of course, about mental health care. And Dr. Hutchings, are there any specific issues that particularly affect our music and cultural community that perhaps are somewhat more concentrated in that realm?
That's a fantastic question. Thank you for bringing this to the forefront. And this is kind of the thing that's most pressing for this patient population is they're surrounded by things that can cause harm. So you're in an environment that is kind of an open environment for poor sleep, poor eating because of your schedule. You can be exposed to alcohol and drugs. So we try to help the patients develop strong abilities to work in this environment and still be healthy despite all the challenges of the work environment and the pitfalls of the work environment.
Very good. So Megan, I want to pose this question to you. Describe your work at the clinic. What exactly are you doing in reaching out to these patients?
Not necessarily like reaching out, like they're reaching out to us just because of our presence, like in the community at like different events and whatnot. We're also like recommended highly, like word of mouth from like other patients. And we also work with like music venues and stuff and managers. So a lot of the times it's actually like family, friends, or like community members that are kind of like given that musician or whoever like that extra push to come and make that appointment. Cause like we have been around like 25 years. So most of the people do know about us. So what we really like want to do is kind of like promote, like kind of Dr. Hutchings said, preventative health, well-being, and like just kind of have that good reputation out here that kind of makes it a little bit more easier to access, especially when like they're overwhelmed because like, oh, they don't have health insurance or, oh, how are they going to make this payment? A lot of times people don't really, they might feel off or know something's wrong, but like, you know, just that hesitation to even go to a doctor's office. Now we all have it, like, but I think that musicians and performing artists and whatnot have it like a little bit more just because of the barriers that they might face in regards to like lack of documentation, lack of like income, a really vague or limited understanding of like the healthcare system in general. But in regards to that, I see someone's like a new patient and they want to access the clinic. I will get the message and like reach out to them and kind of do an assessment of their eligibility. So we see musicians, artists, performers, Mardi Gras Indians, social aid and pleasure club members. So the idea is not to have every single active member of the cultural community come to the New Orleans Musicians Clinic. It's to make sure that they have access. So sometimes like I'll be able to find out some information just by like a phone conversation of, hey, you have insurance. Like they might not even know. Or like, hey, just kind of do like a little assessment that helps me understand, like, if not us, like, where can they go based on like their immediate need and like kind of assess like along the way. So I do health insurance enrollment. We see people with and without insurance, but like if someone doesn't have health insurance, I'll help them enroll in like Medicaid. I've been learning a lot about Medicare lately, do the Affordable Care Act. So I kind of make sure that their insurance is like, if they're eligible, they're knowledgeable about that, and then help them get a medical appointment. Now, sometimes people are coming strictly for social services in regards to housing, emergency and financial assistance. Sometimes they're coming for housing. So rather than connect them immediately to like our medical provider, it's a lot smoother process if like we can kind of get a little bit of a plan for the patient's like immediate needs before they see the provider.
So does the clinic address things that go beyond just healthcare? Do you also assist with housing or food security? You know, things that are, you know, beyond just immediate, you know, physical care or mental care.
Yes. So we do. Like, that's kind of what I do. Like what Dr. Hutchings said, it's like the whole piece, like, that we try to provide. So because of their lifestyle, they just have been known to kind of face other hardships that really affects like their physical and mental health and scheduling, eating, not necessarily denial, but just like hesitation, resource, transportation. So all of these things kind of like play a part in regards to that initial like encounter, especially like with COVID. So we have, we were able to start a program over COVID, like in the beginning, which is called Making Groceries. So it is a program where we have a bunch of volunteers. Some of our elderly patients, like because it started during COVID, some homebound patients, elderly patients, we were able to gather volunteers to deliver like food and other stuff for them and bring it to them. And we have a volunteer that calls them every week to kind of say, hey, how you doing? And what I found out like during COVID is that checkup or follow-up, especially for a homebound elderly person going through that time, was just like game changer, really, like in regards to just making sure like that they're okay and whatnot. And that like, you know, their needs are kind of being met, like, okay, they got their cell phone, like, and they're just kind of, then it rolls into the whole hurricane. Cause we went through that like last year with Hurricane Ida, plus on top of COVID. So we were really fortunate to like just have a lot of volunteers and a lot of like dedicated staff that were able to really reach out to like some of these patients. And I mean, it was like really overwhelming because I'm not gonna lie, like I took a few people on, and once we went there to like deliver the food or whatever, like it was like, oh, I need ice, or oh, I need batteries, and like, you know, but it just helped a lot that we were able to kind of like give that extra support and get them through that really rough time.
Well, you know, like you mentioned COVID, just the isolation alone was such a health issue on so many levels. Nicole, I wanted to ask you in particular, you know, it's often said that particularly mental health care, there's a stigma, and a lot of people are not really willing to come forward with it, or they're ashamed of the, perhaps the feelings they're experiencing. How do you begin to address that?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Well, to be clear, I coordinate an extensive network of contracted mental health providers that serve our patient population. And actually, Megan will be the one that during an intake or work with a patient will hear of the need or desire to access mental health treatment and connect the patient. So I don't have the direct connection with the patients. However, how we have, I think, as an organization, addressed that is by being very conscious and intentional about trying to provide providers for our patients that reflect our patient population, reducing any stigma and really barriers to care. If our patients do not have their own funding or health insurance that would cover such services, that's where the foundation comes into play. And we can say, hey, we are able to support your access to this kind of care for this long. We also offer like community-based events that address different mental health and wellness needs, do a lot of education through newsletters and outreach. So it's very, I don't think our folks are too shy to ask for it often these days. And thankfully it's become such, I would say the pandemic brought mental health to the forefront, right? It is an everyday conversation that every person is having now. And the lack of resources everywhere is so glaring that finally, I think across disciplines, this is being addressed and people are getting creative. And that's something I love about this space is that, yes, we're a medical home at heart, but we are dynamic and creative and expansive in the way that we try to access that, you know, or keep that access for our patients.
Very good. You mentioned volunteers earlier, and any of you can address this. How do you recruit volunteers, or how would someone become a volunteer?
Word of mouth, I guess, yeah. Kind of for volunteers.
People want to volunteer, I would say.
The power of radio.
That helps, of course.
You know, but our communications, our fundraising, our development, it's pretty well established in the community at this point. And people are in New Orleans because they love this community, I think, right? So they want to be a part and volunteer. I don't know if we have any active recruitment of volunteers except through social media newsletters right now. And specifically, we do need drivers for our Making Groceries program. And we have some community partnerships that provide us volunteers to reach those needs.
When you mentioned the Making Groceries program, which, like you said, delivered food to those who do not have easy access, perhaps, to supermarkets, especially during COVID when there was a fear of going to those spaces, how do you get the food? Who coordinates that? Or is that donated as well?
Well, we're currently like in a little bit of a transition, to be honest. I know that like Zoni Mash, they like donate the space like for us so that our volunteers can go there and bring like the items into the people's houses. And then like we're working now with like
Top Box Foods.
During the pandemic, when this first started, we had a lot more partners like Hal and Wolf. Like they did hot meals every like 3 days a week. And like that's a well-known like music venue. So like a lot of people and just like entertainment, like facilities or whatever kind of stepped up and were able to be like, okay. So it was kind of like word of mouth. And I think people just really enjoyed that sense of like community and coming together and just contributing to like whatever way they could really.
And I think it's important too, to note that Making Groceries was the brainchild of some great people who are no longer with the organization, but it was literally like us scraping funds together, people going to Restaurant Depot, people, you know, assembling 100 bags to deliver and collaborating with Hal and Wolf or whoever for the prepared meals. So now that it's grown a little bit, these partnerships with other organizations like Top Box Foods already has that access and that food on hand because that's what they do. They break down barriers to food in the community. Hopeful that that can continue the programming in sort of an efficient and expansive way. But it has been an extreme labor of love. And it like this organization is kind of like all hands on deck.
We're going to take a brief break, a pause for the cause, and we will be back to discuss more about the work of the New Orleans Musicians Clinic and Assistance Foundation.
From the Lower Nine to Uptown, Mid-City to the West Bank. We've got you covered, New Orleans. WHIV 102.3 FM.
And we're back with Beat Cafe. I'm David Johnson, host of this program. I am joined today by three people who work at the New Orleans Musicians Clinic and Assistance Foundation: Nicole Roche, Dr. Jay Hutchings, and Megan McStravick. Dr. Hutchings, I wanted to ask you specifically, what drew you for you to pursue your career here at the Musicians Clinic?
Thanks for that question. I have been with the clinic a little over a decade, I guess around 11 or 12 years now, and I wanted an opportunity to give back to the community that I really treasure, and one of the things that keeps me here in New Orleans, and that's the musicians and, you know, the music industry here in New Orleans, which is the birthplace of jazz and continues to be an incubator of fantastic music. So I play the saxophone and have always had a kind of predisposition to loving music and loving musicians. And this was an opportunity to foster that love and also give back to the people who make this a special place.
Now, you also serve on the board of the clinic and the Assistance Foundation. Tell us about the funding for all the work you do.
The Musicians Clinic relies very heavily on donations from organizations that want to foster good music and good care for musicians, and also private individuals who donate to the clinic. We also are fortunate to have a very special relationship with LSU Health New Orleans, where they provide a lot of services to us and the space for us to work this clinic, and which we could not do without. So that's really the two biggest areas where we receive the means to run this clinic.
Very good. And I know Medicaid expansion has been a particularly beneficial arrangement for the clinic, as well as the music community as a whole. Megan, perhaps you could address a little bit about that.
Sometimes musicians, like for many years, it's getting better now, but their pay documentation was very like limited to like non-existent. Club owners kind of got away with a lot of not so like beneficial, I guess. I don't know, like payment methods up for the musicians where it's like unable to provide like documents. So what we kind of still continue to see is when things rely, like eligibility for like certain services rely on proof or documentation of like income, it has been a challenge. And like, that's kind of like why I'm here a little bit as well, because it's like, you know, foods. And that's why we have to like find other alternatives to provide certain services like that we find challenging to get our patients. Like, so just like food stamps, like that's why the Making Groceries program like really was beneficial, because, you know, when you're in crisis, it's like we don't really have time to go through it, all this like bureaucracies, I guess. And then also we just want to kind of help maintain stability. Like, so until we get the whole like picture complete. But in regards to Medicaid expansion, when that came across, so like Affordable Care Act was passed in 2013, which is like where the government provides a subsidy for health insurance. But part of that was you had to file taxes, you have to file jointly, and you have to make over a certain amount of money. So the idea was that when Obama passed that law, that each state would provide the free health insurance, which is Medicaid, for the people that didn't qualify for a government subsidy. That provided over, like at the time, I guess 70%, just Louisiana's population with health insurance. So that kind of created a path, I guess, to just different services. Cause like once you get Medicaid, like you're in the system and like,
well,
like
it provided
insurance. I just kind of like,
insurance where there had been none, certainly a system that, that got more people under an umbrella than it existed before.
Put them on the map kind of, and just like, you know, cause if we didn't expand Medicaid, to be honest, alternative funding would probably be extremely, extremely hard to get. Before Medicaid expansion, we really only were able to provide like the basic services, like primary and specialty care. So like emergency care services, specialty care services, like in regards to like mental health counselors, eyeglasses. So some of the services that really contribute to like our patients' overall health now became accessible through like the funding and whatnot, because the basic services were able to, like medications. So there were certain things like before we expanded Medicaid, like, cause we didn't, Louisiana didn't expand it till 2016. So basically from 2013 to 2016, like we saw the disadvantages, the disparities of not having like acts of so many individuals not having access to basic care.
I know that recently I read that the Musicians Clinic put out kind of a self-care guide to dealing with the anxieties of hurricane season. Dr. Hutchings, could you address that?
Yeah, so this is a hard time of year for all of us who've lived here for a number of decades. So I was here for Katrina, and I was here for Ida last year, and all the storms in between. And this time of year always kind of raise the hackles on the back of your neck. Is it going to be another time where I'm going to have to be resilient, to use the word of the moment? So yes, there's a lot of anxiety that goes along with that, on top of all the other anxieties that are currently in our environment with global, economic, and other issues. So patients are really being hit from all angles with anxiety. And it's one of the focuses for our clinics, is to help patients to be, for lack of a better word, more resilient and able to deal with the challenges that arise. In my practice, what I try to impress upon my patients and those around me, including myself, is that there's four ways to kind of deal with these issues. Taking care of yourself by sleeping well, taking care of yourself by eating well, taking yourself by exercising, and doing things that you love. So those four tenets are very important for well-being. And I think if we all take a moment to take care of ourselves, it allows us to be in a position to help us take care of others.
Very good.
I was just going to add something to that. Like Hutchings mentioned, like those four things, but it's kind of like, all right, if you look at something and one thing you're just, you know, have been unable to do in regards to like the eating healthy, it's like, okay, just like kind of one step at a time, and having that reminder there, I feel like unconsciously or consciously, like really makes a difference, because people do want to be like reminded, okay, I am important, or I got to do this, drink more water, or whatever it is. And I feel like that extra push and extra reminder is like, got to kind of focus on like, and remind people you're still like doing good.
Right. Just take care of yourself far beyond.
Yeah, it's like one thing at a time. And like, yeah, because don't give up and do nothing, basically.
And don't wait to help to seek help. Like if you are struggling or if you need help, reach out to those around you or to services that are available to you. And there are services available to everyone in our community.
So the buzzword right now in the medical world is monkeypox. Is addressing that in any capacity?
That's a great question. So there are a number of barriers at this point in addressing this new evolving crisis effectively. And I think we need to work together on the community, the state, and the federal level of dealing with this emerging issue. I think what would be most prudent is people practice good hygiene. Make sure that you're, you know, washing your hands and, you know, doing the things that we've learned through other pandemics that we've just gone through. So as this becomes more of an issue, and it's being upgraded on a daily to weekly basis, it seems like we need to have some opportunities to take the opportunities to deal with these issues. There is vaccines that are becoming available in our community for high risk individuals. I think if you are in a position where you are in need of a vaccine, if you are at high risk and there's populations that are more at risk than others, then you should talk to your healthcare provider and ask if you are an appropriate candidate for a limited supply of vaccines that are becoming available. If you do feel that you have had an infection, you should reach out to your healthcare provider and let them know that you believe that you've been exposed. There are a limited amount of supplies to help with an infection. And there is certainly some advocacy that the community can do to reiterate to our community, national and local leaders, that we need these vaccines soon and we need them to be widely available to our community.
And just to be clear, you're not only caring for the individual musician or culture bearer, the entire family is eligible. Is that correct?
Yeah. So in some circumstances, the entire family can be treated by the clinic. That's on a case-by-case basis. We Megan does a great job of helping patients that are available for services get to our services or services that are appropriate for them.
Sorry. No, we don't see children, but we do assist like with if they need to get a doctor, a pediatrician, but we don't technically see patients under 19.
So I'm curious, you said one of the groups that you assist are members of social aid and pleasure clubs. For instance, is there any advice you give to someone if they're going out second lining, how they might make sure they take care of themselves in a setting like that?
Drink water.
Yeah. Limit alcohol intake and pace yourself. And
good advice no matter what we're doing, but especially if you're out in the streets dancing, of course. And where can people access more information about the Musicians Clinic and, you know, potentially make a donation or inquire about volunteering, things of that sort?
The best space is our website, which is theneworleansmusicianscliniccom. Dr. Hudgings, did you have something to add to that as well?
Yeah, I think that's the best way to reach out to us is using the power of the internet and sending us a communication if you're interested in donations or in helping us with our community projects, or if you're in need and you're an appropriate person for the clinic, we'll get you worked in and we'll take care of it as soon as possible.
We also have active, I think, Instagram, Facebook, so social medias as well.
I want to thank the three of you so much for joining me here today. And again, bravo to all of the good work you're doing in our community.
Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
So I'd like to finish with a quote that you can put in the presentation or not, but I think it's a good one. The music business is a cruel and shallow money trench, a long plastic hallway where thieves and pimps run free and good men die like dogs. There's also a negative side. Hunter S. Thompson.
He did have a way with words. Quite an observer experience. We'll take that as the closing statement.
I love it.
Thank you all again. Have a good afternoon.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah.